This is the Better Life, Better Work show, and I'm your host, Allison Crow. I'm an intuitive life and business coach and an irreverent priestess with modern soul medicine for the everyday extraordinary woman or man, and I'm here to help you create better life and better work. This show covers topics on thinking and mindset, business and life strategy, and of course, spirituality and energetics as well. You're listening to the Better Life, Better Work show. More is not better, better is better. Episode number 4.
Ah, we are live. Look at that. Holy cow.
Good morning.
Hi, everybody. Hold on. Give me 1 second to get our technology all set up. This is perfect. So this is my friend John, and I'm going to get him introduced to the technology before we actually get into content. That way a few of you can get in the room. So, and this is what's fun. Y'all, if you know me from the business aspect, I always share behind the scenes. So of course I'm going to take you in the green room before we actually go live. That's how we do things around here. Now, I don't know why. Yeah. Okay. So the comments, so if you're here and can make some comments so I can show John how he can see your comments, that would be super helpful. Otherwise, I need to see it on my phone. Y'all know we normally start a little bit more formally, but I'm a little tense this morning, so I'm going to give myself an effing break. Sorry to John's people. John has a very nice, clean mouth, but his friend Allison, not so much.
That's not so true.
All we you young kids, anybody. To be 21 and able to vote before you're allowed to choose those words. All right. I'm not seeing any comments.
Well, where is everybody?
I don't know. I want to check the sound, too. What did I do with my phone? We're normally not this crazy. So that's the other thing. We can download this video and edit this stuff out. Oh, seriously. Hold on. Okay. Goodness gracious. I see it. I got a thumbs up. And we got the comments. Okay. So the comments are not working on the iPad today. There's Elise. That's my amazing sound engineer. Hello, 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 hello. Okay, perfect. All right.
We've got Christy.
Perfectly.
Hi, Elise.
Imperfect. Okay, let's take a couple breaths, like just to chill that, to CTFO, chill the you know what out. I'm speaking for me. Okay, so for those of you watching, this is the first time I've had somebody in my office, my studio, live. You already know I juggle the dogs. This is the first time I've had somebody else here and thinking about all those things. So I don't know why I made a big deal. It's not that different. Welcome to the Better Life, Better Work show. I'm your host, Allison Crow, and I'm a business and life coach who is here to help you live a better life and create better work. And today on the show, I have somebody really special. I think it's kind of fun that he's my first outside guest. This is my friend, John Davis.
Good morning.
Also known as JD. How do they know you in your world? I mean, like for years, we called you JD. Everybody called you JD, but I was like, his name is John. I call him John because I'm his special friend. What do people call you in your world now?
John Davis.
John Davis. And then.
And it's so formal because it's funny because all of my closest friends just know me just as John, but it's like a big deal for them to say, I'm hanging out with John Davis. It's funny.
That's funny. Well, it is funny. Kind of famous. So John and I met in, I'm going to tell you who John is for me first, and then I'm going to give you like his resume. Okay. Cause you're going to be impressed with both. I met John in my 20s, in my early 20s, in 1992, we both worked at a summer camp together that did missionary work for inner city kids, and I think we did 4 summers there?
3 summers.
3 summers? I can never.
You were there longer because you ended up being a nanny.
Oh, yeah. Okay, thank you. So we met there and got to be really good friends, and this is an important part of the story, okay? I'm going to lay some foundational clues. So one day on our time off, there's a climbing wall at... I have to take credit for this.
Yeah.
There's a climbing wall at this camp, and I was in charge of the climbing wall and the high ropes courses and all these things. Another thing you probably didn't know about me. And John's like, I want to go learn how to do that. Will you teach me? So I go teach him. And he starts, you know, we hook him all up. He's in his harness and I'm belaying him. And he gets about 3 feet off the ground and he gets sewing machine leg, like, holy shit, I'm going to die.
That's because Allison was belaying me. That's why.
No, you didn't even know what belay was at the time.
That's true.
Okay, so let's just park that right there. He did end up climbing to the top and rappelling down and said that was one of the most fun things I've ever done in my life. So just park that there because wait until you hear more about him. At the time I met you, you are actually on track to be an Olympic swimmer. And were you like the the national champ, I mean, swimming, but you were everybody's favorite, a shoe-in to get into the Olympics, and you had a bad day at trials. And
I did.
And it didn't work.
That's true.
And so that's how he ended up at this summer camp, right? Like, just this crisis. My life is screwing up. This was the plan I was going. It's not going. He ended up at summer camp. And
teaching inner city young men how to learn how to swim. It was quite the shift in my life.
Right. And so then after that, my recollection, you know, what did you do after camp and after you graduated from college?
I came down to Denton, Texas for a year.
Which is where I live now, which is totally weird because I used to come up and visit him in Denton. And I remember driving one day by this place and I was like, oh, that's where you live. It was called the hangar or whatever at this church. And so it's kind of funny that we're back here in Denton. I asked John, when's the last time you were in Denton? Because he lived here for a year. So I would visit him then. And then you ended up moving out to Colorado.
Went to graduate school.
And then I moved to Colorado. And we hung out all the time. We four-wheel drived. Haley's Comet. I remember seeing Haley's Comet. We all had.
We rock climbed.
You and me and Tom, we rock climbed. So this is the other thing. He moves out to Colorado and he starts rock climbing. And he's getting his therapy master's in therapy. So how do you say it?
Clinical counseling.
Okay.
Sorry.
Well, I was on that track. I was starting to go get my PhD. I got my master's in educational psychology. Yep. I was going to go get my PhD, and then I got a job instead. Thank God. So we started our friendship. Can I tell them about the conversation on my birthday when you came back from Europe?
Sure.
So John and I were so close friends, but we never had a physical relationship. We were never boyfriend and girlfriend. In fact, he never told me when he had girlfriends and it drove me nuts. But I was secretly in love with him. He probably knew I was in love with him. But I called it emotional fornicating because we were each other's best friends. Like we filled that space for each other. But you came back from Europe and said, Allison, I spent a lot of time thinking about whether or not I want to spend the rest of my life with you. And he's probably much nicer than this. But he's like, but I don't. No, I mean, it sounds harsh, but it was true. And I'm so glad you didn't. Like, I see that so clearly. And it's so funny, if you could probably go back and find some of these journals. Like, I just knew I was going to marry John Davis, but I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing. And you might not be doing what you're doing.
That's true.
And everything in life works for us.
Correct.
So there's lesson number one. Write that shit down. Oh, I forget. Your people are going to watch
good.
This.
You're right.
Are they okay with
They're
that?
All right. Everybody's
okay.
All right.
I'm an adult. I can do it. You manage yourself. Okay.
Hi, everybody. Hi, Maria. Hi, Tiffany. Hi, Rosie.
So, and at that point, we were such close friends. I had already been thinking about going to graduate school. And I remember saying, I got to get out of Denver because you'll never find your one and I'll never find mine one because we're taking up the space in each other's lives. And so we parted ways for a while amicably and with love, but just knowing that both of us wanted to find our life partners and we needed some space. And it doesn't matter how many years later, at some point we ended up reconnecting. You were in my wedding and I was in your wedding.
Correct.
I was your best man.
Yep.
and then we've stayed in touch since then. And you called me the other day and said, I'm coming to Denton, Texas. And he said, by the way, we've been friends for 25 years and you've always been there for me. You've known me all this time. And so he's a really important, he traveled around the world. You know how everybody wants to have someone say, meet me in Paris on the Eiffel Tower on Christmas Eve? Right here, we had a blast.
We did.
We ruined that car. John and his friend would always be like, full coverage, and they would destroy the car. Don't do it. Anyways, okay, so that's something like
killing
just
me.
But here's what, I feel so much more relaxed now, just like starting with that instead of
glad you do, but my face is all red.
So here's the other thing.
Not a good way to start.
John's a very private person, and my people know that I don't have a filter. And so look at you. You are red, but it is a big deal. It's awesome. Okay. But here's what's so beautiful. It's a beautiful friendship. It's beautiful stories. And life is half shit and half amazing. Did we stop? What? Hold on.
Sorry to allow my face to calm down a little bit.
No, it's still going. Okay. Yeah. It showed on our screen that the video stopped. That was weird.
My breath. Talk about feeling uncomfortable.
We have another special guest in the studio and they are laughing.
That's right.
It's funny. They're doing a good job of laughing quietly. Okay, yes, we're fine. Thank you, Kimberly. This is perfect. Okay, so I feel a little bit more relaxed just talking about that. I actually, over here, and I'm not going to show y'all, I tried to find some pictures of you, but all the pictures I have of you, your shirt is off. And I was like, that's a little weird. It's all good. So maybe we'll put some of those in the show notes. Some of these fun, you know, some of us smoking cigarettes in Barcelona when we went to the Olympic place
where
you didn't swim. But we've had a lot of laughs. You used to scare me to death, believe it or not. Mm-hmm. And you probably noticed the difference in me now. Like I fully own who I am. But when I was really close friends with you earlier, I wasn't consciously aware of this, but subconsciously, I just wanted to do everything right. Mm-hmm. And so I very subtly changed who I was and filtered myself to be pleasing to everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm a little bit more loudmouth now and expressive now, and it's all good. So let's talk about what John does. I'm going to let you describe what you do, but I'm going to start it off. So when I knew him as getting his therapy, his master's in clinical psychology to be a therapist, and he started practicing and he started doing his hours, and meanwhile recreationally rock climbing, and one day he takes a kid out on a rock and it's amazing. And that was the same kind of thing we would do at summer camp too when we're counselors for these kids. Right. You know, we're putting them in extreme situations, which is good because it starts breaking down some things like this. And the people, I don't know if it's the people, you can explain more of this, the people you're working for, but people are like, you can't do that. You have to do therapy on the couch in your office.
Correct.
And so take it from there, and we'll go back deeper in the story, but so take it from starting off your practice and then to where you are now.
Sure.
Just with the bullet points and highlights of who you be professionally. And then we'll go back and tell stories.
All right, sounds good. So while I was in graduate school, they basically explained that the clients, and let me practice this. Okay, so the client is here. Okay. And the clinician is here, and there's no way to really bridge this gap. Otherwise, you're having a dual relationship. And it would be costly to them therapeutically trusting and engaging into any type of process for them to make personal change. And I figured out that in the first couple years of some of the practices that I was associated with, that if I was not bridging that gap, I wasn't able to create some type of a magic in the relationship, and therefore the guys wouldn't work hard for me. So I eventually ended up going out on my own because I got frustrated with people saying, well, you can't take a kid out for lunch and call that therapy, or you can't take a kid rock climbing and call it therapy, on top of just the liability that's associated with what happens if somebody was to die. But I thought, if I don't do it, then I'm going to be completely bored in my professional life, right, and I'm not going to enjoy doing what I want to do. And I ultimately want to impact as many people as possible, much like what Allison is doing.
And you knew it worked.
And I saw that it worked. I was very intentional in the way that I was choosing how to be extreme in, you know, for the sake of these guys' lives. And we're now 11,000 guys into it, and we've got people from all over the country, if not the world, calling, asking for services because we're willing to break the rules for the sake of somebody else's heart. So that's really where it came from.
Well, not just their heart, but their whole family. So tell them what kind of clients you work with.
So it's interesting. We, you know, each time I do an intake, I spend a couple of minutes just profiling where their strengths, where their weaknesses are. And my average guy, meaning 95%, is above average intelligent. I mean, I have a bunch of seniors in high school this year, and my average ACT score is 32. So they're exceptionally bright. But each of them have had some type of a disconnect in their life. They're disconnected from their mom, their dad, they've got a family divorce, there's been trauma involved. And so they each have found a way to act out, whether it's drugs, sex, porn, physical violence, shoplifting. So they find a way to self-soothe. And my job is to come in and soothe by creating a relationship with them because they don't know how to communicate. But it's interesting because each of the families that come in, they say, my son's amazing. He's got a huge heart. He loves, you know, children. He loves animals. So they're all gifted in some way, but they're trashing their lives because they don't know how to move forward, which ties into our, you know, theme for today, which is move or die. And at some level, these guys are dying in the inside because they're disconnected because of the choices they're making, because in the end, they're hurting.
Hi, Clementine. Welcome to the show.
Clementine broke in.
It's all good. It's all good. Okay, so you started your private practice, and then how did Two Extreme come about?
So Two Extreme came about, so I have two practices. I have one that is a nonprofit called the Two Extreme Foundation, which we'd love for each of you guys to take a look at. And that was started in 1999 because I didn't want to turn somebody away just because of the cost of therapy. But on top of that, we wanted to do experiential extreme adventures to be able to take guys and reward them for making positive change in their lives. So that's where the foundation was started. And the purpose was to be able to touch as many lives as possible through an intimate relationship therapeutically and relationally and behaviorally. And I got a lot of pushback from people saying, you can't do this. And part of it was me celebrating them, showing up at birthday parties, showing up at their high school graduations, giving them gift cards when they had 30 days of sobriety, showing up at, you know, each time that I've got guys in my practice, I will, you know, participate in one of their activities, whether it's going to one of their plays, a musical, a lot of sports guys. So we'll show up at football games, basketball games, and it's to be a presence in their life because they don't have people that show up for them.
Right. And so,
because their parents are pretty content being exactly where they're at. If they know that their kids are safe and secure, then they're good to go. But not for my guys. They need more, much like your viewers and my families. They need more.
Right. So I remember.
So hold on. So the Two Extreme, a lot of people say, where does the name Two Extreme come from? And it comes out of the place that I work with, you know, some really extreme situations. Mm-hmm. And so I have to match that extremeness with the way that I will end up fighting fire with fire, with engaging in a relationship that's like nothing else they've experienced.
I've never heard that.
Something new every day.
God, so you got to double the extreme. You got to match it.
So we match the extremes. So for example, we've got guys that are acting out legally. So we find ways to connect with them legally with legal agencies and organizations to get them what they need. Because at the time, I mean, does anybody need to go to jail? I mean, does anybody need to be hospitalized for a drug overdose? Does anybody need to have these destructive relationships? No, they don't. But they're acting out because they're struggling and they don't have the support. So for us, we create that support through the accountability and through the relationship.
And so the first, I'm gonna speak to it in what I know as a layperson, right? Like from the outside looking in, you take these guys that are working and they have to stay drug free and they have to get decent grades and they have to not get put in jail and they have to basically do the work and grow and be a good kid and stay within appropriate boundaries and lines. And when they have completed that, they get to go on one of these amazing mountain climbing treks. And we're not talking Mount Vanel in Austin, Texas, you guys. What's the first place you guys went?
Well, so let me add to it. So there's seven facets to the program itself. And the thing that's most interesting, most clinicians, when I was in graduate school, they teach you that I, as a clinician, am supposed to create the treatment plan of what we're supposed to be working on based on how I assess. Mm-hmm. But for me, unless these guys, so the guys have to create their own treatment plan so they have 100% full buy-in as to what it is that they want to change and modify in their personal lives. So that's the biggest key. But two is actively resolving and engaging a relationship at home with their parents. So after that's all said and done, then yes, we end up going. But there's also a community service component. So the three pillars of Two Extreme. Pillar number one is teaching guys how to be humble. Because most young men who come in, their world is all about them. It's not about a relationship.
That bravado and the cockiness.
Absolutely, yeah, and the fair level of entitlement. So we start off with a level of humility, and then phase two is service. So part of the Two Extreme Dream program is you have to serve. And if you don't serve, you don't get to go. So we put together four service projects, or the kids pick service projects to participate in. And then the third thing is generosity, which is when the guys are done with a program. It's giving back, coming back, serving, being a part, or even being a mentor to a young guy that's in the program. So our very first trip was to Mount Kilimanjaro in Africa. So we summited the tallest
mountain. Who climbs Mount Kilimanjaro?
With a group of teenagers. Oh, it gets better. Our second trip was to South America. We climbed, Mount Pisco, just under 19,000 feet in Peru. Our third trip, we climbed the tallest mountain in all of Europe, which is in Russia, southern Russia, called Mount Elbrus, which is 18,540 feet, I believe. And then we just climbed this past summer in Bolivia, a mountain called Mount Illimani, which is 21,112 feet. And then after we do the climb, then we end up staying and doing community service with the people in the local area. So when we were in Bolivia, we actually took a group of Bolivian kids to go rock climbing. And it was so amazing because the girls all showed up in their absolute Sunday best. Leather shoes, skirts, white blouses. And I was like, just make sure all the girls have shorts on and we're good to go. But it was amazing to see the guys participate and help and set up the ropes and belay the kids and tying the knots. Mm-hmm. And every time we do a trip, we always say, what was the highlight of the trip? And they all say the community service project.
Oh, cool.
They don't ever talk about the mountain because really the mountain is really a metaphor for our life, which is, you know, life is a mountain and you're either going to climb or you're going to stay put or you're going to climb down.
Right. So you don't just get them through a process. You're expanding them in a 360 way degree to contribute to their life and to others and then to give back.
Correct.
It's huge, you guys.
It's big. It's amazing.
It's a big deal. And like you said, 11,000 kids later, and this all started with people saying you can't do that. So that's another point I want to point out. What is it that someone's telling you you can't do, but something inside you is driving you? You knew that it worked and you knew that that's the other aspect, that you would love it if it were that way, right? So you hear do what you love. And it's so true. Mm. Oh, but I can't do that. I can't go rock climbing with kids. Yes, you can.
Right.
Give it a go.
I think the key is finding out whether or not you believe in yourself enough to be able to take the risk and to jump. And sometimes we need people in our lives like Allison or myself or other partners to be able to say, yes, you can. And that's hard. It's hard when you have your own dream.
So, you know, my brother, this is a little side story, tangent thinker here, but my brother-in-law is a therapist. He has his master's in counseling as well.
Yep.
And we were talking one time and I said, well, my friend John does this. And I was like, well, why don't you walk people around Town Lake? Right. So you're moving too.
Right.
And so he does walk and talk therapy Town Lake in Austin.
That's
and
great.
They do their therapy sessions and he's got it up on his website and everything.
That's
and
awesome.
So you inspired that. And that was like when he very first started his practice and he's built it up and he's totally independent now and has a really strong practice. And I overheard him the other day and he was like, yeah, I have a walk and talk therapy client I need to go to. And I was like, he's still doing
That's awesome.
It.
That's awesome.
And so that kind of brings, and we'll come back to some more about Too Extreme. Maria has put the website on there. And in the show notes, I'm going to share a couple things. I'm going to share the website. I'm going to share the Too Extreme Facebook page, which we all want you to like. You can donate to Too Extreme. So instead of giving tips to me today, if you want to throw $5 at Too Extreme's way, they would totally appreciate it because it helps a lot of those kids that don't afford it. They don't want to turn anybody away. And I'm also going to share, there's a link to a video promo. You can also see it on your site and your Facebook page. But so you can get a little bit more feel and see some of these mountains. I see that Maria says, come climb Chirripó in the tallest
in Costa
Rica.
I've been to Costa Rica, is where Maria lives.
That's where she lives. Maria and Elise are my staff members. And they, so not only do they do digital media and my assistant work, but they also are building a retreat center and run Airbnbs and are building their own world in life. They moved from Florida to Costa Rica.
Awesome.
So, okay. So let's talk about, we have this theme, move or die. And so that's, you know, at a really fundamental level, Hey, Bill, can you come get Clembo again?
Bill's cleaning the pool.
Not Bill. That's the
pool
guy.
With Queen playing in the background.
I gotta tell the pool guy that come on Friday mornings during the show. Bill! Thank you. It's all good. When somebody says you can't do a live show or you can't do a podcast because you have a dog, you say, no, I'm going to do it anyway, right?
That's right.
You just do it anyways. Real life, you guys. Okay, don't let a dog or somebody telling you no that mean that you can't have an impact. Okay, so fast forward, you're living this life, building this amazing thing, doing this amazing work, contributing to these kids. These kids are contributing. And I get a call from you 3 years ago about, was it 3 years, 14?
Mm-hmm. 2014.
Is that when you were diagnosed?
Yep.
Okay, so I get this call and it's like, Allison, I got to tell you something. And you said, I've been diagnosed with motor neuron disease, otherwise known as ALS.
Or Lou Gehrig's disease.
Lou Gehrig's disease. And immediately I knew who that was because I had just lost a friend to ALS. And in my mind, I was like, shit, in 3 years, John's going to be dead. And that's probably what you felt when you got the diagnosis, like shit. And so tell us about that.
So what happened in January of 2014 is my right foot dropped. I was not able to sustain my weight and was not able to maintain my balance. It took about 2 weeks before I decided to go see my doctor. And at that point, I was running, cycling, swimming, highly active physically. And my entire physical life just virtually got shut down. So I had to go through a battery of tests from x-rays, MRIs, CAT scans, EMGs, where they you're fortunate enough to be stabbed with 1,000 needles and they turn electricity into the needles. And it's really a fun experience. We should try that on the show sometime. And after going through all of that, they found out that I had some severe arthritis, stenosis, that I had some compressed discs in my back. So not only did I have the motor neuron piece, I also was having some spinal issues. Mm-hmm. But they couldn't figure out where it was stemming from. They couldn't figure out if it was just motor neuron disease or was it because I was having back issues. So they told me that there was nothing that we could do for about a year to see if my body would actually calm down. And then a year after it, after seeing four doctors, I ended up having major spine surgery. So my first official diagnosis came at the end of May of 2014, and the doctor had, you know, said that this was motor neuron disease, otherwise known as ALS. And at that point, they told me to stop moving because my movement was actually causing me to fall and trip. And I was hurting myself. So at the it's literally like my life just got flipped over. Mm-hmm. And there was nothing I could do about it. There's no medication for it. There's no treatment for it. Everything was uncomfortable. Sleeping was uncomfortable. There were times that when I got out of bed in the morning that I couldn't even hold my weight and it would crawl to the shower. I was an emotional wreck. And so I went through three diagnoses, but it was the fourth doctor who actually is a specialist in Denver, an older gentleman, kind of looks like Sigmund Freud, ironically. And, he ended up telling me, he said, you definitely have motor neuron disease. He said, I don't see the ALS because you're maintaining a level of musculature. So he said, but here's the deal. He said, if you don't move, you will die. So he said, I don't care what you do, whether it's little steps, big steps, walk with trekking poles. They fitted my foot with a special device called an AFO. So mm-hmm. it allowed me to be able to maintain the pressure when I walked. But what I did was I got back into the pool, which was a strength of mine back from my collegiate days. And so just the little bit of movement, I started to see some improvement, as Clementine is back, started to see some, improvements. And then after that, the following June, I had major spine surgery. And that's really where the move or die perspective really took a life of its own because I had a too extreme dream in Bolivia this past summer. So I spent a year of moving as much as I could possibly do. And I've reaped the benefits of that, still moving today.
So one of the things that John brought, and I know you can't really read this and see this, but he brought these calendars, and they each day, Clem, it's okay, baby. Each day he would track how many steps he took and how many miles it was. And so he has June, 2000, July.
That's for a year.
Okay, so yeah. This is a whole year starting in June 2015. And then he would add up how many steps he took and how many miles. And so the first day was 3.2 miles.
But I should say that the 3.2 miles was not 3.2 miles at one time.
Yeah.
It was, I was taking a 10-minute walk with one of my patients, 15 minutes with one guy, 20 minutes with one guy, and then back to the office to sit down because I was wearing a clamshell back brace.
Right. So you went from dragging yourself across the bathroom floor because
right.
you couldn't sustain your weight, being
correct.
Basically being crippled.
Correct.
to having back surgery and getting the foot thing.
Right.
So you're, I don't know what the word is, but you're in devices.
Mm-hmm.
And then he just starts moving a little bit. Not going out and exercising and not going out and working out, but just moving. You said even here there's one day, like, so you can see there's some movement, and then he has this day that it's the whole entire day is 3,288 steps. And he was like, yeah, that was basically me going downstairs to get something and eat, coming back up, crawling in bed, walking to my toilet, you know, just like you were sick in bed. Yeah, bad
tough day.
But he tracks this. And then I get this call or this text in November. And this is the other thing. So, like, I'll text John and be like, let's talk. And he's like, no, it's not a good time. And in my mind, this is what I'm doing. You don't know this. But in my mind, I'm going, has he lost his ability to speak? Is it he deteriorated and he's not ready to share that with me? Is he, I don't know. But then I would see on Too Extreme, you know, I'd go snoop and I'd say, well, there's the bike and this other stuff. So I didn't know if there was something going on with you physically that you weren't ready to share with the whole world, which would be legitimate. And so I just gave you a space. But I get this text one night and all of a sudden comes across my phone are these pictures of you crossing
the finish line.
The finish line at a triathlon.
The world championships for Xterra in Maui.
Homeboy with ALS. 3 years after the diagnosis, right? So, or I guess it was 2 years, 2.5 years, because right. It was in November when you sent me that text. And now, random side note and little tie-in, as you call it, on mountains you tie in, but right before he got his message and he was texting me this stuff, I had, just in my own little quiet time, I felt like my angels had told me, Allison, move or die. And mine was more of an emotional death. So I'm not comparing it to having ALS or motor neuron disease, but I was dying on the inside emotionally and flatlining there. And I just heard move or die. I didn't hear exercise. I didn't hear lose weight. I heard just walk. Just take tiny steps. And those of you who know me already and have known that since December 6th, I've been walking almost every single day. I might have missed 2 days. So walking. So he sends us over. He says, not only that, but a friend that I was diagnosed with at the same time died this week, the same week that I did the Xterra thing. And then at Xterra, what did they say to you? You're like, you're not disabled.
Yeah, as I was getting ready to head out to the ocean, I was allowed to participate with Xterra as a challenged athlete because of my diagnosis. Otherwise, I wouldn't have qualified.
Right.
But I got to share my story, and ironically, the person I shared my story with, it started with me asking for a chair at the event.
Right.
And I had just said, is there a way to have a chair at the transition so that I can sit down? Because I can't sit on the ground with my spine surgery and tie my shoes. I'd have to roll over to stand up, and I didn't want to knock over another athlete with my stuff. So the lady that I'm sharing this with turns out to be the president of Xterra, Janet Clark. And so now I was then invited to participate in the world championships in Maui. So I trained really, really hard for, you know, just getting to survive that and participate in it. And now they are providing chairs for each of the challenge athletes at the transition to make it as easy as possible for them to thrive and succeed.
Yeah.
I forgot what your question was. I was excited to tell you that.
Well, no, I think it's a big deal. And then his story comes and intersects with mine. And I'm getting this across the text, and I felt like that was a little nod from the universe. Like, see, I told you move or die. And John's got the extreme case of it, but it was just really exciting to see. And then I talked to you a few weeks later and I was like, what is your diagnosis? I'm confused.
Right.
And you said you had been diagnosed 4 or 5 times. How many times?
So I went through 5 different processes, and the fifth doctor ended up taking the ALS off the table. And he said, when he did my EMG, he said, to be honest with you, he said, if you had not moved at the level you did, he said, you probably would have degenerated further. So he said, keep moving. So I am still diagnosed with motor neuron disease, so I still have that muscle weakness. And for those of you that don't know what motor neuron disease, it's a degenerative neuromuscular disease where your neurons tell your muscles, we don't need you anymore. So in essence, what my last doctor said is, it's almost as if you freaked out the neurons by having your muscles move as much as possible. So your neurons have kind of backed off a little bit.
You told your neurons, no way, I'm moving.
And so, well, that's in essence why the charting of the mileage was to maintain. And so I just want to encourage each of you that are watching that this is not about going out and becoming an extreme athlete.
No.
This is not about going out and training hard. This is about just moving. So, you know, this 1 year of movement that I charted was to motivate me to get on the mountain and be a motivating factor for the guys to say that if I can overcome, so can you. So there was nothing tough about the training. It was just movement. Mm-hmm. And then so when I showed up to do the Xterra in Beaver Creek, I had no idea what I was prepared for because I didn't train for it. I was just moving for right. it. And then I found out how extreme it really was. So I actually had to step up my game.
And through here, what we didn't talk about and he showed me is like, so he starts moving, just walking. And then he starts adding in the swim with a very short swim. And then it gets to a mile swim. And then eventually he's able to add in. But that's the whole point. It wasn't this exercise plan. It wasn't like you were trying to hit a certain goal. Correct. You just were tracking. Like it's like checking off a box. And then writing down the data that you did do something.
Right.
And so I laugh, but there have been times, I don't know if y'all saw today, I had a coaching call this morning and I was walking in circles in my mm-hmm. backyard. And it's not anything that causes me to sweat, but I can either sit here with my body tightened up and not using all of my facilities, or I can move my body. And then when I started tracking and I started seeing little bits of success, not huge success, but just I started feeling better. I started feeling alive. I haven't felt depressed since I have not felt clinical depression, and it's not my meds because I'm just on the same old med that probably I need to be off and find something new. It's mm-hmm. probably not effective anymore, but we're just maintaining, but my spirit comes back and my mind comes back and I feel alive again and I feel passionate again. And I'm not down there doing CrossFit. No burpees here. I'm not even doing the plank. I'm just making this shit up.
That's all right. It works.
But that's the thing. It's like, and I was never an athlete like you, but I was an athlete
yep.
through high school. I was very athletic and yep. active up until my mid-30s. And then when I started this job, this work that I mm-hmm. love, I sat a lot behind a desk, behind a computer with a headset on.
Right.
And so just finding ways to bring movement back into my everyday. But there's been times at night where like I look down and I have finally set a goal and I'm slowly inching that up. And it's not a hard goal. It's still just a move. It's not like, oh, I'm going to go run a marathon.
Right.
And I'll look and I'll see that I'm 1,000 steps away from it. And I'll walk back and forth awesome. Across my bedroom while I'm watching my TV shows. And it's, you know, it's the length of the house. So it's, you know, it's probably 30 feet in one direction. Mm-hmm. And I just walk backwards and forwards and backwards and forwards. Steps. And sometimes like, I wonder if Bill hears my footsteps. He goes, what is she doing up there?
Yeah, but you know what? It matters. I think at the end of the day, people, this is what I've found is that the families I'm working with, most of the parents are between 40 and 55.
Okay.
And they're sedentary. They're right. not moving. Right. They've settled into a routine. They're trying to survive parenting. They're mm-hmm. trying to survive their financial situation. And they've become sedentary and they're not moving at all. And so we're talking taking little steps, nothing massive, but the little steps, they all add up to, let's just pick one of the later months yeah. where, you know, there's, let's see, let's get a cycling here. You know, for example, October of last year, I walked a total of 170.95 miles. I cycled 310 miles in the month. And there were days that I was leaving work and I was like, I don't want to go do this. I'm tired. I'm exhausted. But just getting on the bike and just making the effort to go, it made it easier. And you're right. I did feel better. And then I was impacting more people because of how I was feeling.
And then that motivates you from the inside.
Right.
You feel like the other day when I woke up and I got dressed and Bill's like, what are you doing? And I was like, let's go to the gym. And he's like, who is this woman that I'm married to? Because he's always like, hey, you want to go to the gym? And I'm like, nah, I got a million reasons why. But the energy was not coming from, I should go to the gym. My body was saying, let's go right. to the gym. Right. And so that's the physical aspect. That's one of it. But the other mental aspect goes actually back to you starting your business, to me starting my business. I heard the other day, I made a little meme about it, but if you're sitting around thinking about a dream, so whether it's a movement dream or a weight dream or a building your business dream or making an impact or raising money or what it is, the longer you sit around and think about how to do it, the more depressed you're going to get, the more panicked you're going to get, because all that energy is going right here.
Right.
And your brain neurologically is taking all that energy up there. And if you're not a master of your thoughts, you're just going to worry yourself into quitting. Before you even start. I remember in my corporate days, was like, oh, I've got to go to the gym. And I resisted it forever. And I walked in the door of the gym to sign up. And there was a sign on the door that said, the hardest part is starting. And I just sobbed. And, you know, I was like, they got me, because it really is the hardest part. But I get it now. And so then a couple of weeks ago, I heard this girl say, frequency over intensity. And I realized how many of us, me included, you included, you weren't just a swimmer, you were going for the Olympics. You don't just rock climb in the gym on the thing, you climb Mount Elbus. I don't know if everybody knows Mount Kilimanjaro, but I don't know if everybody knows Mount Elbus. You know, you climb these huge mountains. I'm the same way, like, in the sense that when I go for something, I go big. When I left corporate, I looked at my husband, I came home and sold a car, I sold my jeans, I sold all these things to make it financially happen. And he was nervous, but I was like, I'm hitting a grand slam with this, like I'm doing this. And I was able to, but we can only sustain that for a while. And so the reality is, if you get up and make a little bit of a movement every single day, so you take one kid to the mountain, you go to lunch with one kid, and then all of a sudden, the pieces are set up to form a practice. And then you keep doing it and keep spinning. The pieces are set up to form the foundation. Right. And now you're at this, like you say, climb the mountain. We talked about this last night. You're at a plateau where you're ready to expand. You know, John's doing this work and he's the therapist. And so we were brainstorming about ways to expand the operations to impact more families. And he's got, there was somebody from Texas that wanted to, because he was going to be in Texas, wanted to meet with them and have their kid and move to Colorado. And, I hope I'm allowed to share. There's no names. I can share that. Right. Okay. But you know, so that's the thing, is like the word is getting out that he is doing great work with these kids and that this organization is, and they have staff members in a community and they do all sorts of things. Like, it's more than just a private practice now, but that all started
with one person
and one small movement. You right. didn't step up for those first steps and try to hit a home run. You have 11,000 youth later and all the people that are in their lives, right? Yes. So let's say the average family is four people.
Right.
At a minimum.
Right.
On top of teachers. Right.
Judges, probation right. officers,
and
doctors,
all those people,
lawyers.
Right? So that's probably 100,000 people mm-hmm. later.
Right.
Having an impact. Who knows how many impact just by hearing your story today, but do you realize that each of you, it doesn't have to come in that same container, but move or die. Move or die mentally, move or die physically, move or die in your business, move or die in your practice. And this is what's interesting, because you were talking last night. It was like, if we don't move the nonprofit in a direction that we're not sure what to do, then a portion of the business dies.
Right. So I want to tie in on one of the comments that you said in terms of the impact. I presented at an Eagle Scout graduation ceremony, maybe it was 10 years ago, and there was a father who, everybody else had a speech that was already prepared to get up on the stage, and I was the only one who didn't have a speech, and there's 300 people in the audience, and he ends up giving me my question right as I walk up to the stage, which is, how do you measure the impact of one man on another man's son's life? And so, I mean, I ruminate on that all the time, which is, I think through each of those guys, and a lot of those guys, I mean, think through, I started my private practice in 98. So these guys are dads now, they're married, they're business owners, they're mm-hmm. business employees. And so they're impacting people because of the success of feeling good about who they are. And it just took them taking the step to say yes to treatment, or yes to, you know, being a better guy, or having a, you know, softer heart, or whatever it was that they were struggling
right.
with.
It's really pretty profound. That reminds me, we hadn't really talked. I forgot. John's written a book. Tell us about your book. It's been out for a while.
The book has been out for a while. The book is called Extreme Pursuit. You can find it, I think, at Amazon.
Right there, oh my.
Yeah, I wrote it because somebody had actually pursued me on numerous occasions asking me to please write what it is that I keep saying over and over in my office. And I also wrote it because I was tired of repeating myself.
Hey, that's a good business tip, too.
It was a good business tip. So here's a visual of the... It's nice that you actually have it. I'm very proud of you. That's the book right there called Extreme Pursuit. winning the race for the heart of your son. So I wrote it actually for dads, with the intention that they could read four chapters in one day and read four chapters the next and be filled up with a lot of great examples of things that we find success in our office. Little things. One of the things that has been the most catchy for my dads, because really the biggest issue is my dads are disconnected from their sons. So one of the things I made as a recommendation is that 10 minutes before your son or daughter's to get out of class to go to lunch, show up at the school, be at the front desk, send somebody down. Your son or daughter's going to walk out to the front and they're thinking, why is my dad here? Especially if that's not something that you normally do. And then just say, I just wanted to take you to lunch today. That's it. No lecturing, no moralizing, no reiterating what he or she may be struggling with. Just take him out to lunch and have fun. And, you know, how are things going? And just, you know, ask those questions. And if it goes well, then play hooky for the rest of the day and take him to a movie. At the end of the day,
it's true though.
It is true. Developmentally, and there's a story in the book about my own son where at 18 months, he literally started pursuing me and chasing me around the house. So if I was going upstairs to get laundry, he would be saying, I come. And I was like, no, stay there. I got it. I'm just going to go up and come down. But he just craved being around me. And right. I think that we've lost that connection, especially now with the social devices and all the social media, is that we've lost that connection. We've lost that ability to relate. And so our kids have stopped pursuing us because we're distracted as adults. And so those are a lot of stories that are actually in the book that would help you connect better with your son or your daughter. And actually, I think since it's been around for us, it's like maybe $2 on Amazon. So
hey, we're talking here. See, she pursues me all the time. She does the same thing. If I come downstairs, I'll be right back.
If you didn't pursue her back, then she would eventually stop coming to you, which is what happens in a lot of our relationships, especially if we're disconnected with our spouse or our employer or our children.
My friend Phil made a meme the other day. It was like, when you have a conflict, if you search to resolve it away, that's the direction you'll go.
Correct.
So this idea is just turned. It's the same thing. Turn towards what you're afraid. Turn towards, you have written down here, was told you can't do this. So I did. Right. And not just told, but here's the thing. Not only do we have people outside of us telling us that we can't, but we have those voices inside that say you can't do this. And it's so easy to follow that voice instead of turning in and moving through that discomfort, or it only being a single, or it only being walking up and down your stairs or around your backyard and feeling like that's not enough. And my brain just goes into this web of analogies that it can relate. So we've got a few minutes left. Let me get my brain in order here. I want to ask you a couple of questions. Number one, what is your most recent, not diagnosis, but what's the prognosis with your health? I mean, you go from being diagnosed with motor neuron disease, you're coming up on three years in. She's outside. Can you open that and keep it open? Thanks. And what's the status of your health now?
Okay, so currently, recent diagnosis was in September. My newest neurologist is keeping me just at motor neuron disease, but I fall within a 1% category that they have not been able to figure out yet. So they're just monitoring my health and my movements and any degeneration, and I just have to keep on moving. So physically, I have to keep moving.
Okay. And so this helped me because I didn't realize this last night. You said, so there's motor neuron disease and that's like cancer. And then there's breast cancer. And
Correct.
So you said there's like motor neuron disease and then there's ALS.
Correct.
So that helped me understand that.
It's a broad heading.
It doesn't equal ALS. Exactly. Now here's the other thing I'm curious about this. I'm surprised like somebody's not poking you and studying you going, well, you were this whole move or die thing. Like, is it because you were already a high performance athlete?
It helped.
Because you hear of some of these celebrities, I don't know their stories. Like, did they get it while they were playing football, that kind of thing? But you were already using your body. And also you weren't just using your body in one way. You're using your body in so many different ways.
Right. Multidisciplinary.
You've run as long as I've known you. Mm-hmm. And then you would climb and hike and no two mountains are the same and those kind of things. So I think that's fascinating.
Thank you.
I'm curious to see too, like, you know, if that becomes part of protocol.
Well, I feel like I'm doing better than where I was. I mean, from where I was 3 years ago to today, it's a total miracle that I'm even sitting here.
You don't have any
you.
Supports on. I mean,
no.
You have your back surgery, but
no.
You don't have any brace. I remember you telling me for a while you had that. So I think that's crazy. crazy awesome. Okay. And so we don't even have time to get into the hope and the inspiration of that, but I just want, I love the move or die. Like you think something, and for you, die was completely literal because when people get ALS, it's a death sentence.
Right.
Okay. A couple other things. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to ask you two sets of, I want to ask you to give the audience two things. The first one, what do you want them to remember? And then the second one is, how can they support you? Right. So the first one is going to be about these guys here. What do you want them to remember? Real quick. Helen asked, what's the name of John's book?
Extreme Pursuit.
And we'll put an Amazon link to it. Is that the best place for him to get it? Amazon?
Sure. Or,
okay. Winning the Race for the Heart of Your Son by John E. Davis, M.A., which you now have a C.I.
All the fun initials.
He has all the ABCDs.
I mean nothing.
Okay, so what is it that you want them to remember about their lives from our discussion today?
That's a good question. I think that I would probably want each of you to walk away knowing that you can live the best version of yourself by just taking your first step.
Mm.
And I think that that sometimes is really hard when you've been kicked down. You've struggled in your job, struggled in relationships. You just feel like you can't find that path or you can't, or you're not on the path. So what I would like you to walk away is knowing, I want to be an inspiration to you by telling you that if I can do it, so can you, just with one tiny step. Mm. And so today on your lunch break, instead of, doing what your norm is, maybe grab a girlfriend and just say, let's walk 10 minutes out and 10 minutes back. And then check yourself and say, do I feel better by doing that? And at the end of the day, if you do, then let's try something different tomorrow. And if it's the walking that helps, that's great. If it's listening to music, that's great. If it's going for a jog,
dancing,
or connecting with a friend, calling somebody you haven't spoken with, any of those things, if that would help you, then you will feel better about yourself and therefore you could potentially impact even more people that are around you. And I think that we're here and we exist to connect and have relationships. I don't think that we're here to make money. And I mean, we have to make money to survive. I get that. But my point being is that I think that we are here to be connected with people. And I think that's why people are connecting with you. And I think that's why we have a 6-month wait list for our program.
Right.
It's because people are desperate to connect.
Not just doing therapy.
Correct.
Connecting.
Yeah. Relationship.
Right? Yeah. Relationship. And we were talking even about social media and the power. John was asking me some questions about how I use social media in my business. And just the same thing we talked about on last week's show. I said, listen, you can do advertising and marketing all day long, but if you don't take the conversation offline, you're not really making, you can't make the impact. So the impact is made in the connection,
right,
not in the distribution of information. It's made in the heart-to-heart, face-to-face, voice-to-voice contact. The other quick question I had for you, I can't remember.
You asked how they could support
me. I've got that one, but then I had one in between. Oh, well, you already answered it. That's why I don't need it, because you gave them an action step, I was going to say. Because that's one of the things I'm committed to doing on this show, too, is not just talking theory. Because otherwise, if you're here and you're learning it and you're inspired and you do nothing, you've just been entertained.
Actually, so, all right, let me jump in on that.
Yeah.
So there was a young man that went through my program about seven years ago who was obese. And we were talking about what type of steps could he take to actually feel better about himself. And so we started with, he wanted to lose 15 pounds. Well, he was over 300 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was a really big step for him. Well, he ended up getting all the way down to 210 pounds. So
oh, wow.
He lost 125 pounds, I think, in total. Well, then our motivation changed to something else, which was now he wanted to shape his body and feel like he was actually in shape. So he gave me a challenge and said, I challenge you to do 9,000 pushups. Well, I don't do push-ups. So I was like, 9,000 push-ups, are you kidding me? And he was like, dude, 100 a day for 90 days. And I was like, I can't do 100 push-ups. I literally said, I can't do 100 push-ups. And so he said, well, can you do 10 before you get in the shower? Can you do 10 when you get out? Can you do 10 in between every single client?
He kicked your booty.
He totally kicked my ass, telling me like, yes, you can. And so guess what? I did. And I got the 9,000 push-ups in, and it was just 10 at a time. And there were days that I was sore from the day before, so I did 5 at a time, and I just then kept adding it throughout the day. So if you can stack your movement, you're going to feel amazing about yourself.
I love it. It's so true. That's the thing. It's like I can walk around that pool, even if I don't go to the gym or don't go around the block. I can go around the backyard, and my backyard's big enough. I haven't never counted how many loops. But some of the days that I've gotten the most steps are when I've only done that.
Right.
I look up and I go, oh my God, how did I walk 6 miles today?
And you were still connecting with people because you're talking on your phone.
Yes, exactly. Okay, so then I want to give you guys an opportunity. As always, there's never an obligation, only if you're inspired. Tell us what Too Extreme needs. We know it needs money. And so there's a, if you go to TooExtreme. And it's the number 2Xtreme. And Maria has put it in there. But if you go to TooExtreme.info on that page, right in the middle of the page, if you scroll down a little bit, there's a donate button. So you can donate. So instead of giving tips to Better Life, Better Work Show and me today, if you feel called to, what does your organization need?
So what I've established over the last 25 years is kind of a one-stop shopping mentality, which is if a young man needs drug and alcohol counseling, I'm certified to be able to do that. If a young man needs drug testing, we're able to do that. If a young man needs mentoring, we have mentors available. If a young man needs academic tutoring, we've got tutors available. If they need family therapy, I can do that. The problem is it's just me.
Right.
So what we're trying to do is raise enough money for us to have a center where I can train other therapists,
right,
because there are, I think, out of all the graduate schools around the world, there's only 6 graduate schools that teach what I do. So when I go to speak at a graduate school, they say, how have you been able to do this for 25 years? Because it's never been approved.
Right.
People don't believe in it. But yet we've got the success to prove that it totally works with a 90% success
right
rate. So what we're looking to do is have a center that's large enough to meet the needs of families nationwide, that when they walk in the door, we can say, you're going to see this person and this person. We're going to have an in-house psychiatrist, an in-house drug testing, in-house drug and alcohol program. We're going to have an in-house school mentoring program, tutoring program, family therapy. So there is no program nationwide that does that. And we believe that we've got a model that really works based on the success we've seen for the last 25 years.
Right. So there's, and this is more than like we were talking about these different levels of business, and to expand this way is going to require, I mean, this is a nonprofit organization. It's going to require some big donors.
Correct.
Not just donations, but donors.
Yeah, people who stick with us.
And so maybe you know somebody. You might not have a penny to your name, but maybe you know somebody that is either good at raising large sums of funds, somebody that has a passion for this. Maybe you know somebody who has a son that needs to work with John. But I know a lot of my friends have worked with organizations who've raised money, and you were saying, you know, I've been able to do this. I've built my business so far, and you have a business, you have employees, and you have this whole team. But now it's ready to scale your team to the next level.
Ready
and
to
all
explode.
Of us. So here's the one question: it's not just how do I do that, right? So we talked about this in session one. You know, people go, well, why me? That's a victim mentality. And then we move up and we go, well, how do I do this? But your brain doesn't ever answer the question how. So you start asking what and who. So what do you need? And that's why I say, who do you know that can help? Who do you know that even if it's not monetarily, maybe you know somebody where they can look at a model of something that parallels and you can see the business structure? Because sometimes we don't know what we don't know because we haven't met the person that knows it.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're just putting this out there. What I love about the social media, and we were talking earlier about the places to put this, and you guys were saying that you got a really big donation one day from mm-hmm. somebody, and somebody on your team followed up and were like, what caused you to give this donation? Like,
right.
what was the source of inspiration? And it was one paragraph
right.
on your website.
Yeah, it was just our executive
summary. So you never
summary.
Know. It wasn't somebody who'd, you know, seen or had the kids or worked.
Yeah, they didn't know us.
And that's the thing, is that I trust that the universe is so loving and supported, and that they're... We never know if there's a contact that come out and can and help John and the Too Extreme Foundation reach the next level of supporting people, because you're right, there's only so many hours in the day. And I love the idea of training other people how
Thank
to
you.
Do this.
Thanks. Actually, let me jump in on it, because I know we're about out of time. So immediately, a couple of needs are to like us on Facebook and to share it with your friends, share the experience, share what you heard, share how it might have inspired your heart. Number two is we need folks to be able to volunteer and help us in the specific areas. I mean, not only, yes, we need finances to be able to help for staff. However, somebody might have a gift that's out there with marketing. I mean, we need somebody who can help expose the program through marketing, and we don't have the funds to pay for a marketing specialist.
Right.
So we are needing a team of people, not just people to give, but people to serve and be a part of our team, even if you're in Costa Rica. I heard that about you.
Don't you try to poach my people.
I'm
just teasing.
On it.
but I like that. So, like, not only can people volunteer boots on the ground in Colorado, Denver area, Littleton, where you are. But if there's people that can help across the world that see this and have something that they want to volunteer with.
Correct.
And if you're looking for a way to get back and maybe you have some of the skills. Brilliant. I didn't think of that.
Right.
Awesome. Okay. So I want to take another deep breath before we end and just check in and see if there's anything else. Other than I love you and I admire you. And I'm really proud of the man that you are. I always adored the young man that you were. But I'm really proud of what you created. And a lot of times, you know, building my own private practice, I get a, you know, like, how do I scale? How do I make this a business? And you've already made it a business that I haven't been, I've been too chicken to go forward and, mm-hmm. and expand. And I'm just really proud that you keep climbing those mountains. And that's why I said, you know, plant it at this 3 feet and your foot shakes. And if you had let that stop you and said, I'm not going to do it.
I wouldn't be here.
None of it. You wouldn't be here.
Right.
Not to mention the organization and the impact. You know, when you leave, the impact stops. But this is what I love, too, is the selflessness that comes through is not only so that someday when you do leave, and hopefully it's at 95 and you've had a full life, that the legacy continues. And that there's not just one therapist doing this. There's thousands of therapists around the world doing this. So
thank you for saying that.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you guys for watching.
Thank you for joining.
If you want to get a copy of the show notes or there's going to be some of this information that we talked about today. If you want to join the community, go to allisoncrow.com/better. And I'll have all the links. You can sign up there. And then we send out an email every week. And the email has last week's show notes and this week's show notes. So we'll send out an email this afternoon that has all the information where you can like his page, where you can, and don't just like it, like follow it so you can see. And actually, it's really pretty cool to go look and see, because visuals help, where you can see where they're working with the kids. I'm going to write the word too extreme out. I know it's in the comments, but I'm going to write it out right here on this little piece of paper. Oh, tell them about the Everyday Hero while I'm doing this. And don't worry about going over time.
So last week, I was actually in a board meeting on Friday, and the door to the board meeting opened up and our volunteer coordinator walked in, and she's actually not met my board team yet. So I had looked around the room and I was like, well, everybody, this is Ruthie. And then who followed in was somebody that we had gifted their nephew one of our service days. So we do 4 service days per year. And then after that was somebody who also was a beneficiary of a service day. And then a TV crew walked in and I was presented by Channel 7 News, ABC News in Denver, their affiliate, the Everyday Hero Award. So that's going to start airing this coming Sunday night in Denver. It'll air for a week and we'll have a link through our Facebook page. So if you have benefited from something that we've shared today, I would like you to be able to use that for you to be a hero in the people that are in your lives. So,
oh, thank you. I'm glad we remembered that. So here's how you spell too extreme. The number 2, X, treme, not EX. I remember when I first was trying to look for you, I was so damn confused. But it makes perfect, now that we know the story, the 2 times,
that's
the
right.
Extreme. We match the extreme with the extreme. And so it's tooextreme.info is the website. But if you put in the search engine, if you don't want to wait for my show notes, if you put in the search engine of Facebook, Too Extreme, you'll pop up and find their page. And there's really fun pictures and videos. And it's kind of nice, you know, we can tell this story verbally. I'm not in a place where I'm equipped to do slideshows and stuff, but I would love for some of the people just to see the visuals of what you do with these kids. This is no, I don't want to put anybody else down, but this is not a hike in the woods.
That's big.
This is the stuff, like, people do these mountain climbs and die. They don't come back. And he's working with these kids. And in the past, you've had some big donors that have helped support these trips and stuff like that. So thank you guys all for being here. John, thank you
nice
for
to meet
being
you guys.
Here. Love you. Appreciate you. And we'll see you next week. Thanks for listening to the Better Life, Better Work show. This show is recorded live on Friday mornings at 11 a.m. Central on my Facebook page at www.allisoncrow.live. You can also get show notes and connect with me at www.allisoncrow.com/better.
This show is Leroy Brown and Clementine approved. They're here to encourage you to think about adopting before you shop for your next pet. More is not better. Better is better.